Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot.
And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Sri Peruvemba. He is the Vice President of Strategy at Bebop Sensors. Sri, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to talk about our technology.
So for the benefit of the listeners, always interested to understand people's journey and some of their experience, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you've done, and how you arrived at this position and this activity.
Sure. So I grew up in the southern part of India, got an engineering degree, and worked there for about 5 years, and later decided to move to the US to get a master's degree in business, and then I've been working in the tech industry since then. I've had some very good luck working for some companies that took off and did extremely well. And in the last 7 years, I have been assisting many smaller technology startup type companies. And that brought me to Bebop Sensors, where I have the role of VP of Strategy, helping CEO Keith McMillan in building out what I think is one of these awesome companies that's got some incredible technology. And we're getting into a lot of very interesting applications, including creating some applications only because we have this technology.
Fantastic. So that sounds like a fun, exciting area to be involved in. You know, one of the things that occurs to me when I hear people talk about multiple successes, if you look back at that through your career and you've got those companies, is there a common thread or something that you can pull from all of those companies that you say, that was one of the key elements to the success, or is that just it's so different and so varied?
I can only cite what I have personally experienced, which may or may not gel with what is popularly known. For me, I think the companies I've been associated with that have had great success is there was a tremendous amount of hunger among the management team to succeed. And then the secondary aspect was that they were very good at what they did. Each person could carry their weight. They did a very good job. It is when companies where the individuals may not be as hungry or may have different agendas or lack of skills at all of those, that's when things break down. But I think the primary thing is hunger, whether it is somebody looking for a job as a fresh graduate from school or a seasoned executive trying to take a company to massive success. If the person is hungry, almost everything else kind of, sort of follows. I'll give you a similar analogy. A lot of times, I travel, I come back from a long overseas trip, 12, 15, 20 hours of flying. And then the one way to get rid of jet lag for me is to walk or, exercise or do something. But it's very hard. The body is aching. But if the mind is set and we say we're going to go do it, the body will kick and scream and it'll drag behind, but it'll work. It's the exact same thing in these companies. If you have hunger and a strong desire to succeed, you can find the people, you'll find the resources, you'll find that technology will magically start working better and all of those things.
That's interesting. I haven't heard that, but I think, it certainly resonates with me that hunger is an important element to this. And, certainly that driver for me is an aspect of it's those good habits that come from the discipline of saying, it doesn't matter what my body says, this is what I'm going to do to sort of carry through. So that's great and very helpful. So tell us a little bit about Bebop Sensors. So unusual name, you've obviously been associated with them for a while. What is it that they do? What's their sort of key innovation?
I'm sure. So Bebop Sensors was founded by Keith McMillan, who's an entrepreneur. He's built other companies before and had very successful exits. A few years ago, when he had the then success, he decided, he's also a musician and he wanted to play music, travel around the world and so on. He found there was a very practical problem that kind of still exists today, which is taking musical instruments on an airplane is hard. Actually, taking musical instruments even in a car is hard because they're very large. Like you take a drum, for example, it's massive, right? But even if you use both sides of the drum, like in the case of an Indian musical instrument versus most Western ones, you're using one surface, but everything between those surfaces is air, and we're carrying these massive musical instruments. So he decided, how do you solve this? So being an inventor and a scientist, he came up with the concept of these fabric-based sensors that you can sort of place to the bottom of that surface of the drum. And when you actually tap on the drum or beat on the drum, instead of using air to create the sound, you now have sensors that will pick up the location, the intensity of the beat, and so on and so forth, and mimic a traditional musical instrument. And he's been very successful doing that, and started a company called Keith McMillan Instruments, and it's still a very successful company shipping millions of these products. And the product I just described to you is called the Bop Pack. And as the company went about this business, they realized, hey, these sensors have a ton of other applications. And that's how bebop sensors was born. Bebop is from that genre of music, jazz, that's where that name comes from. And the company originally started with this existing customer, which is our own sister company, Keith McMillan Instruments, that is buying sensors from us and able to ship millions of these musical instruments. And then we got involved in a whole host of other applications. And literally, there are some industries where it is because of us that we've created some new applications and so on.
You know, I can't tell you how much that particular story sits with me, because through medical school, one of my best friends in medical school was a drum player. And I can't tell you the number of times at midnight I'm helping him carry his drum set out and packing it into the car that it didn't fit into. And yeah. I was desperately wishing that he was a flute player. So you're really singing my tune in this particular instance. I wish that had been around at the time, but I'm sure there are people that are thanking that whole sort of innovation. So fascinating story. I always love origin stories because they're sort of the drivers of why we do things, and then ultimately other things come from that. So as they've created this spin out and are doing new things, tell us a little bit about what's going on there. What innovations, what solutions are you offering, and in what particular instances?
So the fundamental technology is a fabric-based sensor. So we make them in roll-to-roll, so they are about yay wide, and we can go a kilometer long if we wanted to. And we can cut them literally in any shape or size. They can be a few millimeters to a few inches. What is nice about this technology is these sensors will sense a stretch, a twist, bend, force. So all of these features allow us to sense a variety of different motions in a given application. With that as the background, these products were deployed in certain applications. For example, one of the early applications was a trackpad. Right, just like you have a mouse or trackpad on your laptop, we could put the sensor there, and that sensor would sense where your fingertip is, how much pressure you're applying, whether you're tapping with one finger, two finger, all of these things, and we could do it very accurately and so on. So that was one of the early applications, and then we started putting them in some of the medical applications. For example, we were putting them in the insoles, in shoes, and they're very, very accurate. They can measure a lot of different forces and twists and bend and pressure and so on, and pass this information both to the shoemaker, to the physicians, to diagnose, to prevent, to better design shoes and all kinds of things. And then they went into sports gear like shoulder pads, and they went into helmets. For example, if you're playing football, even today, even with good helmets, people still take a hit, and it is very important for the helmet maker to know how to design those helmets better. Second, when somebody takes a hit, imagine you have live data going to the physician that says, hey, the hit came here, not what people thought they saw. You know, it's very accurate. What's the magnitude of that hit, or how much pressure was applied, and all of these information. So it sort of created a lot of opportunity to build these applications, which have both an ability to make better products, much more ability to diagnose and create, in some ways, think of it this way. The way I envision this is, it is possible in the future we can make games much more safer just with our technology. We're not there yet, but we are in the early stages of that. And there may be games that are much better enjoyed tomorrow than today because parents are afraid that the kids are getting injured. So there may be ways to design better equipment because there's a way to sense. As they say, you know, when you measure something, you can always do better. And if you don't measure, then you don't know.
Well, one of my favorite sayings, to be clear, I quote Lord Kelvin, who, if you cannot measure, how can you ever improve? For those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the incrementalist. And today I'm talking to Sri Peru Vemba. He is the Vice President of Strategy at Bebop Sensors. We were just talking about some of the areas of innovation. And you were talking about this fabric, and I want to dig in a little bit because to me, understanding this, you talk about fabric and it can be extraordinarily long, wide, it's sort of applied. My question is, what's going on in there? Is the fibers in it? How are you sensing this? How are you reporting on it? How is it, you talked about a trackpad, and I think about that and think, well, don't I have to have a matrix to allow me to identify what's going on?
So essentially what we do is imagine like a regular fabric, right? The kind of stuff that our clothes are made on, kind of something similar. We have a, right. a machine that generates this fabric. It's a roll-to-roll fabric. And then we coat that fabric with a very unique and proprietary material that gives it these properties that'll cause us to be able to sense from the fabric. It's a nanomaterial that we coat the fabric with. And then obviously because it's fabric, you can cut it into different shapes and you can something that fits in a helmet versus gloves and so on, they're different in size and shape. Historically, sensors came in these little rigid rectangular or round kind of thing, and they were heavy, they were bulky, and clearly they were not flexible, they were not light, all of these issues. We've solved all of those by having a fairly unique technology can do all of these things. And essentially what we're doing is with our sensor, so we, depending on the application, for example, we make gloves with our sensors. Mm-hmm. And we have our sensors in below the knuckles. And then we have sensors in the palm and so on and so forth. And from each of those sensors, we have printed conductive ink that goes from the sensor all the way to the drive electronics, which tends to be either in the wrist or somewhere else where we can put more rigid components like semiconductor chips and so on, which are not flexible. But the vast majority of the surface is flexible because our technology is flexible. And it makes for example, with our gloves, we are one of the only ones that is a wireless gloves, right? It's not tethered to anything. It's extremely light. It's a universal size because we don't need to have a lot of infrastructure there. They can fit almost any hand. We may have a large and small, but there's not a lot of different sizes. And then we can charge these gloves, and they will work for 15 hours, on a single charge. So you can, if you're a gamer and you want to go all day or all night, you can do that with these gloves. Or similarly, if you are training to be a surgeon, and they want you to practice in a virtual reality environment, a surgery. And the surgery goes for, let's say, a few hours. And you'll be very comfortable wearing these because these are wireless. They're untethered. They're very sensitive. Our material is extremely sensitive. We get a lot of data. And that data is passed on through the drive electronics to the folks that take this data and put it into applications that now says, okay, here's what you're seeing. Here's what you're doing. And so on. So people who are training to be surgeons or other medical practitioners get better and better because they actually have feedback, which is not based on somebody's eyesight or somebody's intuition. It is based on pure data.
So you talk about this fabric that's coated with this nano material. Does that mean that you can put that on any material? Is the material specific, or could you you know, if I wanted to take my own shirt, for example, is that possible, or is there something tied to the substrate in this instance?
Our fabric itself is the substrate. So technically, we can make a shirt for you just with our fabric. It's right. not very comfortable because it's, you know, the way it's designed, it's much better if you make patches of our material, fabric material, and put them on your shoulder pads or your wrist. Right. One, you don't really need a very large sensor to do what we're trying to do. You just need small strips of sensors. My example, back to that glove, you know, we can make a glove with our material that covers all fingers and palm and everything, but you don't need that much material. All you need is right. small strips in different spots wherever you're going to bend your finger, move your finger, so on and so forth. And that's what we do.
So to drill into that just a little bit to make sure that I've got it right, as you create it, so sure, you can have a big size, but ultimately each of these sensors is a custom sensor because of that printed circuit board that you described, right? That's sort of incorporated into it. And you can place that anywhere. And the point being is that it's a flexible material that can be of any size, any location, and extraordinarily light because it's essentially fabric, albeit it's connected to a block of technology that's obviously going to be heavier and power and so forth. Is that right?
That's right. And also, ours is not a high power device. It's a very low power device, which is why we are able to do with a single charge for the battery to last forever. So don't think of the drive electronics in your wrist to be any more than a small wristwatch size thing. And it'll work forever with this. We have Bluetooth or otherwise wirelessly, we are able to connect to this technology. Now, there's one additional thing that we do with our most popular product, which is the gloves, is yes, we can sense. In a virtual reality environment, you've got visual and audio, and those technologies that are developed, continue to develop. There's some extraordinary stuff happening in that area. But we now provide the touch. Right? So what we do is we can now, when you have your hands in a virtual reality environment, it turns out that humans need to know where our arms and legs are when we are in even in a virtual.
Funny thing, that, right?
Funny thing, yes. Otherwise, we get disoriented. And now we know exactly where they are. Right. Unlike in the past, there would be some kind of simulation, and I move my hand in one direction, it doesn't quite follow, or it goes in the wrong direction. It can be very confusing. We've solved that. In addition, we've done something else. We put haptic actuators at the fingertips. What this does for us is when you, in a virtual reality environment, when you touch something, let's say you're performing heart surgery, you're touching your heart, you can actually see your hand at the right spot where right. the heart is. Now we give you an additional feature, which is feedback. So when you touch different kinds of heart tissue or skin or right. an instrument that you're holding in your hand, we can cause those haptic actuators to give you feelings.
And are those different feelings? Is it more than one
different feeling? Different
feelings.
Wow. So what we do is it's the same actuator. We just put software into it. It's kind of like, think of it as music. We put music files into it, and it'll generate haptic sensations. Yeah. And in a very crude way, you can tell the difference between touching water versus a rock versus, you know, hard surface, rough surface, so on and so forth. And now you have basically what we're trying to do is, you know, if you look at a final goal, we're trying to remove the virtual out of the virtual reality. And it feels so good when you have this because you now introduce the sense of touch. You know where your fingers are. Let me give you a simple example. Now, if you think of virtual reality, a lot of people play games. And for I'm not a gamer, but you know, for me, a lot of the games are about shooting something. And so even with the as simple application as that, you've got your index finger in the trigger and you're shooting something. But in a lot of applications, from the time you depress your finger to the time it shows up on the screen, there's a lag, and that's very, very disappointing. We are operating in milliseconds, so you will not see any lag. Instantly you'll feel. And second, the haptic actuators, we can basically record the sound of, say, gunfire, take that software or take that musical file and feed it into our actuator, and you'll actually feel like
you'll feel the shot, right?
And now it becomes a much more engaging experience. Now, other than gaming, which is fairly obvious, we've got very good traction in the training environment. So imagine, we are now shipping into the Air Force for the Air Force to train its pilots and personnel on different equipment. Now, typically, they have very, very expensive equipment. We are talking about tens or hundreds of millions of dollars of equipment. So rather than try it on the real thing, which there is a level of risk that the new person may damage it, you may want to have a virtual reality set where they can experience almost the real thing. And it does two things. One is the trainee is able to feel and sense and participate much better. So they train faster and they, you're sort of simulating it much better to the real thing. Second, we get live data that can stream and go to the trainer that says, hey, this individual is exerting less pressure here, or the posture is not right, or some other way we can give feedback. Sure. Instantly say, rather than wait for a week for the results to come and for them to tell them, hey, you should have done this different. Instantly they can say, hey, move this slightly, so on and so forth. And that can be very powerful.
Yeah, so I'm sorry, I've just got to say this. Ready Player One? I mean, for me, this is... I can step right in. It feels like it.
Ready Player One is all about us.
This is the suit. This is everything that we saw in that movie. And I've got to say I loved it, not least of all because of all the music and the references to my youth for sure. So this is very exciting. That haptic sensor, is that different to the nanotechnology? Is this a different layer? So it's an additional layer that you've added. So this is like more innovation around this.
It is. Vast majority of our products do not have an haptic actuator attached. In this particular product with the gloves, we did because it makes perfect sense. In many of our applications, it's just the sensing aspect, but we actually don't give feedback to the user, and those applications don't demand. For example, a shoulder pad or a helmet, there is no need to give any feedback. We may actually distract the player if we give any feedback. But we want to just sense. We want to be accurate. We want to measure and provide very accurate data.
Fantastic. So we just got a couple of minutes left. If I can ask you to sort of think about this, from a healthcare standpoint, to me, it's clear, obviously from a virtual training standpoint, there's clear opportunities, particularly for that instant feedback and, some of the elements of sort of engagement and, minimally invasive surgery, all of those things. But have you thought beyond that? I mean, are you seeing sort of additional interest from the medical space?
We are indeed. So the gloves are fairly a newer thing for us in the last, sort of 1 or 2 years. But prior to that, we deployed our sensors in hospital beds so that we can detect and prevent bed sores, which is obviously a big problem. And then we can put them in wheelchairs to make sure the patient is sitting in a manner that is comfortable. We can also help the wheelchair manufacturer design better wheelchairs and so on. With the gloves, in addition to the training aspect for surgeons and so on, we're also able to rehabilitation and things like that, when somebody wears these gloves, the way they grip something, the way they twist something, all of these are extremely important for the therapist to know so that they can make sure that these exercises are more productive and you can discharge the patient much sooner. And this is the direction where it's going so far as the medical application is concerned.
Fantastic. I think, very exciting technology, tremendous opportunity, obviously not just in healthcare, but, that's my particular focus and, some real sort of innovation that I think is going to really change the way that we interact with the real versus the non-real world. So exciting stuff. Sri, just remains for me to thank you for joining me on the show.
No, thank you so much. I think it is shows like yours that give opportunity for startup companies like ours to expose our technology, where our hope is that somebody who had never heard of us listens to this, and then because of that, we create a brand new application or transform something. So thank you so kindly for giving us this opportunity.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, The Incrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.